Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and this is Carl from Incredibly Strange Films and Deviant Legion. Nice to have you with us for this wonderful commentary watch of Hal Hartley's No Such Thing, our sort of introduction to Spooky October. And with me, as always, is my co-host. Yes, my co-host, Miss Rachel. Say hello, Miss Rachel.
Hello, Miss Rachel, and happy spoopy season to all of you. I've been celebrating it since, like, September 1st because that's how we roll, but we're officially allowed to do it on the podcast now.
Yes. And now, of course, I want to introduce a very special guest, John Killian. John, if you remember and listen to our commentary of A Dark Song, we're very, very happy to have you with us, John. So thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, I'm super excited to be here, guys. Thank you so much. You know, I love doing these things with you. And Rachel, before you popped up, Carl and I were talking about our memories of our first experience with this film. And it is something else. It really is.
Well, just so everybody knows, precursor to the film, I yet again am the virgin on this one. I don't know how this keeps happening, but I have been actively staying a virgin because Carl showed me, if you've listened to any of our past shows, Carl made me watch the opening monologue, and holy shit, if that doesn't make you want to watch the rest of the movie and then see everything else this guy has ever done in his life.
Right.
You've probably got shit where your soul hole needs to be, because it is beautiful. So I'm really super, super stoked for tonight. I've been waiting for like over a month for this.
Awesome.
So before we start, I want to talk a little bit about Hal Hartley. Hal Hartley is my age. He's a little younger than me. He's 62. He's been doing films since the late 80s. Now, I was back in Bradford running the music store, and HBO had this little tiny film I never heard of called The Unbelievable Truth, starring Robert John Burke. And that was my first introduction to both of them. And the next film we did was Trust, which is an absolute fantastic film, but probably best known for the Henry Fool trilogy. Which is Henry Fool, Fay Grimm, and then Ned Reipel, which was just put out a couple years ago, like 2014. He's very, very much connected with the independent films of the 90s. He's a very unique filmmaker. And one thing I do want to make clear as we start watching this, not only did he write the film, not only did he direct the film, but he wrote the musical score. And I want to make that clear. This guy's also a musician and composer. This guy's very unique. And you're going to see some really fine actors here, and including Dame Helen Mirren, as you've never seen her before, I think. And I love her in this, by the way. Julie Christie, who I just adore. Sarah Polley, who I also adore. We just did a show yesterday on the films of Terry Gilliam, and she made her debut as, I think, a 9-year-old in Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
Yep.
So I've loved her since then. And just a really, really fine cast. And Robert John Burke, if you do not know him, you will remember him after this movie. He actually was RoboCop in RoboCop 3, but his most recent credits was as one of the main bad guys in Person of Interest, and a really good villain. But here, he's the monster, and he's not the scary one. He's not the scary one. That's all we have to say. So what we have No Such Thing, 2001 on YouTube. And unfortunately, it does have Spanish subtitles. We either had the choice of Spanish or Arabic, and I'm sorry, I need to see words and not scribbles. Nothing against the Arabic, but I just thought, you know, we can deal with Spanish subtitles. So we're going to watch it on YouTube. Are you guys ready?
I'm ready.
I am.
I'm pulled up at 00. It's much easier to do that on YouTube than it is ok.ru. So thank God.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm double up on the ready.
Okay, and I'm just adjusting my volume a little bit. And what we're going to do is we're going to go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. Okay, so everyone get their movie all set up at 00. And here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
Boom. Seeing Freakies and all kinds of good shit.
So this was the only film of his that was released by a major company. You will also notice that the executive producer was Francis Ford Coppola.
Is it? Okay.
Yes, an American
production.
And it is coming. God, just like gets my soul. I am so ready.
Okay, we're
this.
Not going to say much during this dialogue here. We're just going to let you.
Yep, here we go.
Yep. One of us may be a bit loud in the background.
They tore all of them to pieces, tore us all the best off into the south bank. I try to withdraw. I retire. I hide. But still you find me out. Even my dreams, eluding my solitude, filling the air itself with your unending and pointless noise. Try to be offended by my mere indignant contempt with them, or I'm supposed to be flattering to lackeys with their tablets and paper lawyers. Talent, short-sighted expert. Talking to me like I was a goddamn child. Time is depressing. There's a fun like this. You won't come kill me. Well, then I'll have to kill you all.
Okay, somebody is still seriously very loud in the background. I think he's
okay, hold on.
That a little
hold
bit.
On, that could be me.
And then, well, try that.
Is that better?
Slightly, yes.
Of course, the technology is a little different in 2021 than 2001, so I can't believe this film is 20 years old.
I know, right?
Okay, so that's all I saw was before he walked out, and so now this is all
right.
Fucking new to me, but I am already loving his costuming and everything.
Yeah,
you
are
the
costume.
I am. I do professionally costume people, and those boots are really period for what is supposed to be an ancient dude. So there we go.
Now, I got to say something. There is one place in the world I want to go, and it's Iceland. Look at that.
Yeah. Yeah, one of my very close friends had a chance to go there herself and check it out with her own eyes and said it was one of the most beautiful places she's ever been.
And that right there is, like, so scary to me. Just the white waves crashing and stuff. Like, no, I probably couldn't handle that. I would have an anxiety attack. Especially if that dude just busted up in my cabin like that. Fuck your bar. Buy a new bar. Charlie Murphy.
I love this.
Fuck your cane. Buy a new cane.
I love it. It's the spitting on somebody after you've already beaten the shit out of them. You know?
Okay, so I have a question for everyone. Take a look at these geometric patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the movie, I'm going to ask you what you think they were.
I think that they're concentric circles. Like, you know, one of those, like, spirograph things that you used to do when you were a kid?
Yeah.
That you put the pencil in?
Uh-huh.
And,
oh,
and
yeah. I used to play with those a lot.
God, I had so many of them. I had ones that would make bunny rabbit shapes.
So to be honest, my first thought would be atoms. But, well, no, actually not anymore, as it's morphing and changing, not so much. Okay.
No, it really feels like the dot is your pencil on those spirograph things. And it's just making this random design until you're finally done with it and you've gone back to your starting point.
That's not exactly random, though.
It's not, but it feels like that is what I said.
Uh-huh.
Until you finally get back to your starting point and you realize that it's not a random design.
Yeah.
It was intentional all along. It just felt random.
Mm-hmm. Ah, New York City. And there
mm-hmm.
she is. I
oh, Sarah,
you know,
Pauly.
She's too young for me, but I have a crush on Sarah Pauly.
Oh, I've all, you know, absolutely, 100%.
It's kind of like if you have a crush on Natalie Portman in Leon, then you're a little
yeah,
fucked
yeah,
up,
that's a little
and you're
scary.
Totally allowed to have a crush on her for the rest of her acting career.
Yes.
Actually, the movie that made me have a crush on her actually was Dawn of the Dead.
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought she was in that. Oh, shit.
Here,
good
go make
call,
some
buddy.
All we need to do is get our hands on the worst of it. The very worst news possible. Fred, what he's got on the national team. Oh, no. Sorry, you forgot the government bomb strike. Not but have a friend shot himself.
Wow, is she like that on a wind tour of news or something? Because that's really the feeling I'm getting right now.
Mm-hmm. The mayor is so well in the cat.
How is this 20 years old? Because I really feel like they're talking about, well, a recent president of ours we had.
Here, hold on. Sarah,
same Hollywood studio owns this television network.
Oh, sorry. What is it, Jesse? A clue says that the good friends of our TV crew and I.
What TV crew?
We sent them there 2 months ago to investigate the legend of the monster said to exist in an abandoned U.S. missile silo near an isolated North Village.
So why is a 12-year-old girl working in a news office?
Paper and camera clerk. One of our little clerks. Someone claiming to have killed them.
Killed
them? A crew. What? Tell me more. Cameron, that was my fiance. No. Oh, God. Oh, my God.
She doesn't even look old enough to have a period. Fiance?
No, it's
good.
Can it be me? Come on. Can I be the one to go on the next trip to print the TV crew? God, dear, you're going to go make the coffee in the morning. I went to college. I studied journalism.
Look, you're very young. This could be dangerous. You know, 3 young men have gone missing out there already. Think of yourself.
I'm family. My mom died last year. She brought the house. But, Jim, my young one.
Okay, I'm quiet, but whenever Helen Mirren is on the screen, I just go crazy.
Oh, of course.
And this is a different under everything.
This is a very different role for her.
Again, I mean, she looks like 12 in this fucking movie, but she has a fiance. Like I said, she doesn't even look old enough to have a period yet. Jesus Christ. Yeah, apparently she's working for a major news organization and traveling to another country alone.
Mm-hmm. But all this, you know, this is such a comment on our news and our situation back in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We think things are so bad now, but you look back, this wasn't that far. I mean, this was definitely a stretch.
Hey, guys, I'm sorry to throw this out there, but I had a quick hiccup in my service. What's your timestamp right now?
I got 12:56.
I'm 12:59, 13:01.
I got 12:56.
Got it. All right, we're good. Thank you.
I mean, I know who she is, and I know she's old enough, but it just like it seems like they're purposefully making her look very.
Oh, they are.
Yeah, it's. You're talking about Sarah Polley, the way that they dressed her up?
Right.
It's the hair, really, but also the way they dressed her up, the fact that they put her in what I consider to be a schoolgirl uniform dress.
Yeah, it was...
But there's
a
reason for that. There's a reason for that.
It was essentially trying to promote the whole innocence of it, but I understand how it could be misconstrued as something else, but to me it's pretty obvious that they put her in that position to, like, promote the concept of her being a very, you know,
young,
a very young, naive, innocent, and yeah, right.
Something like that almost defeats the purpose to me, though, because it's like it almost seems like they're trying too hard. Because she is an adult,
but
I don't know an adult woman that owns a dress like that or a Peter Pan collared shirt.
But
so.
This is very, very much how Hartley style. How Hartley style is to overstate even with the dialogue, if you notice how she's saying the dialogue.
Yeah.
So, Carl, I'll tell you, this is actually the one and only of Hal Hartley's films I've ever seen, but I'm going to do a deep dive into him in the upcoming weeks for sure.
Holding the frame for you. Go.
Okay, that did happen to me when I was basically a kid. It was my first flight ever, and I was, well, I wasn't a kid. I was a teenager. I was a legal adult at that point, but I was 18 or 19 on my first ever flight, and I was so confused that they kept holding flights for me. So I can see where some of this is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it still, it does feel a little overstated right now, but I think it's going to like way more obvious and interesting. Not that I'm not already interested. This is pretty great so far. Oh, same subway. Somebody's running out.
Airline address to the Atlanta platform. Boston expects the van to have 6 months.
Come on.
Oh, I got this. I want to say a person service.
I want the names of everybody on that flight. And I want a camera to be the home of every parent, child, and relative you get your hands on. I want to shine. Margaret, if you start crying, you're fired.
She was on that flight. Pull yourself together. This plane's headed where?
Carl, you're right. This really is like one of the best, it's most unexpected, but one of the best Helen Mirren roles ever.
Yeah.
I mean, she's almost not recognizable as Helen Mirren, except for that distinctive blonde she has. And the fact that she's one of the only older women that can pull off a pageboy bob like that. Seriously.
By the way, you did catch that Beatrice was on the flight.
Yeah.
Crashed, okay.
Yeah. Well, I'm still paying attention. I know I'm talking, making my commentary. Oh, they're going to find Beatrice, though. See, that's what I got the binoculars. She's going to be floating on a piece of the fuselage. I just have to
do a little more than that, but remember I said this movie had a lot of personal connection with me. You'll see.
And does anybody else want creepy Norwegian sweaters like they all wear on the boats in these movies? Because I want that to snuggle up in every day of my life.
Okay, so now we're in Reykjavik. And there's Julie Christie.
You know it's an old movie because they were using Mac computers, Mac desktops.
Uh-huh.
Well, they were Apple back then.
The that much internal bleeding, scream a little bit. If you're damaged, fine.
So you probably didn't expect this plot twist, did you?
Well, when they said there was a massive plane crash and they thought she was dead, I kind of had a feeling. I'm thinking she's going to be paralyzed.
Yeah. You'd be right about that.
Because, I mean, they both just had that look. It was very brief, but they had that... Oh,
yeah,
she's fucked up beyond belief look. Like, ain't never going to be the same.
I'm sure we're going to
But you know what?
Yeah.
That one visual of Marin's face, you know, it just conveys all that right away.
Instantly. I know. That's exactly what I was trying to say. It was the facial expression exchange between the two of them. They didn't have to say anything. You already knew. Like,
yeah.
Shit done changed.
She'll do whatever I want. No.
She'll do whatever.
I don't want to talk to the world. I need to know. Why? What? Why does the world need to know what it was like to crash into the sea? Prevent. They need to know all I can to prevent another crash.
Another costuming aspect I need to bring up is they put Helen Mirren in purple something in every scene in this movie so far, and that is seen as a royal and a power color.
Absolutely.
Like her scarf in the last scene, and I can't remember what it was in the first scene. It was something just minimal, but...
You're on your own. You've got no one in this world, Beatrice, remember that. A few weeks from now, this is all going to blow up, and nobody anyway is going to give a damn about the poor long-term survivor of Flight 167 and accumulating medical bills. Just trying to help you out. Thank you.
She doesn't know how to react to that.
Well, she's probably acting really fucked up, but that is a really messed up thing to say to somebody in the hospital.
You're a celebrity. Your media darling. You're an institution just waiting to happen. It's a phenomenon.
Chrissy gives her that look. I mean, you got two of the greatest actresses out there. Just... They don't play off each other very much, but boy, when they do.
They don't even have to say anything.
No,
like, they're so great,
it.
They don't even have to say shit. They had a whole scene between themselves with zero words.
It's not
impossible. And in this country, it is most likely free. We have universal health care. It is worth the cost.
So, John, you're not saying much. Oh, maybe John has disappeared from us.
The servant been raptured.
I'm looking at it. Oh, John, are you there? No, he's still with us.
Hey, sorry. I'm having some signal issues over here, guys, tonight, guys. I'm sorry about that.
That is okay. We haven't.
Can you hear me
so
now?
I was just saying I hadn't heard anything from you. What, you got any comments so far?
No, I was saying that I am completely enraptured in this because I haven't seen it in so long. I forgot, how, you know, again, you and I talked about what we were fed through advertising campaigns and what we ended up walking into with this film was just not what we expected. And it's, you know, it still blows me away after all these years. 20 years later, I'm still just...
Yeah. I'm coming into this completely clueless except for the opening monologue. So I know I'm making random comments, but that's just kind of how I am in life. Anybody will attest to that?
I certainly will.
I will definitely have some comments as this progresses because there are a few key scenes moving forward that I will have some words for. But
and this
wow,
one,
oh, man,
is
this
tough.
Is a good pick. Yeah, you know, it is. Yeah, this whole sequence is, I don't know about you two, but I know that I've had some pretty tough medical issues in my life, not quite this bad, but have been hospitalized enough to know that it's a tough place to be, you know?
You know, and one thing I will let our viewers know as we look at this, one of the things that really connects with me is I had cerebral palsy. I was in braces. And I was also in crutches for a while. And this is really tough, this sequence. And there's a shot later that nearly makes me cry.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously. I said there were a couple of reasons this movie is very personal. This is one.
I will say that my physical issues were never quite that bad, but I did have a lot of physical issues that have basically ensured that I'm supposed to be in physical therapy or doing something to keep myself stretched out, or I would be curled up into an irreversible ball for the rest of my life.
Yeah, the doctor, yeah, and I do PT all the time to keep limber. And the doctors told my mother I'd be in a wheelchair for the most of my life.
The doctors told my mom I was going to be in a wheelchair by 6 years old, and that if something didn't happen, you know, before that and or after that, that I was going to be permanently crippled. So I've just lived my entire life going through PT. I've never had to deal with the painful surgeries and braces and things like you have, Carl, and but I want you to know that I've always been on the cusp of that. And I, as I'm getting older, feel it more and more. I start to lock up more every day. And I'm like,
Yeah.
It's like, it's scary. This movie is, like, psychologically scary. Because you think, holy shit, this can actually happen to me. And I haven't even seen what's supposed to be the crazy part about this movie yet.
So she has to be. She has to be alert so they can gauge the pain.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But she also has to be completely immobilized, which is why they have the halo on her.
Right, exactly.
I knew a girl in high school that got into a massive car accident and had to have a halo on for like a year. And that whole thing that they've got on her right there on the table, that's basically what this poor kid had to wear for an entire year. It wasn't quite that large, but it looked almost exactly like that. And, you know, pins going into the skull and everything. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Hey. They weren't saying anything or making any noise. Why were they covering their ears?
Because of she tensed up her hand. She's in a major pain.
Yeah. I can imagine. I really can't. I can't say that, but I can only try and imagine.
Carl, what was the name of the actor who plays the monster again?
Robert John Burke.
What else has he done?
Well, he did a lot of Hal Hartley's films early in his career. I love that she goes from the walker to the king.
I was just about to say that.
Okay.
That made me so happy.
Mm-hmm. And as I said, he actually was cast as RoboCop in RoboCop 3. He's done a lot of TV since then. And as I said, he was the major villain on Person of Interest.
Let's go look for Jim. I want to know what happened.
I forget how much I love that actress until I see her with her hair down, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's who you are. Oh, my God.
Of course, Julie Christie was in Petulia and so many films. One of the ones I truly remember her from is Shampoo.
Oh, yeah.
She also is mentioned in a Kink song called Waterloo Sunset,
really?
Because she was in a love affair with Terrence Stamp, and they talk about Terry and Julie on Waterloo Bridge.
She has been touching her hair. Is this some sort of religious thing?
It is. It's like she is reborn. It's like you want to touch Christ when he's resurrected, right?
Yeah, but they're all only really touching her hair specifically.
Beyond that, it's no use having a cup. They said that we can tell the monk. They did not attack us. Finally, a month after the police contacted me, was one of my cars checking my son in that pit.
Oh, look at those lovely mountains.
Oh, just amazing. Anytime I see a movie that's set in an Iceland, that's one of the, like, three places I need to go before I die. It's on my bucket list.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Dare I say, I think it might be in the top five for me. Definitely in the top 10, but it might actually be up in 5.
A little. This is a wonderful conversation here.
Yeah.
Because it's about imagination versus, you know, scientific truth. She says sometimes things happen that we can't explain. We're blessed. Right there. That makes me cry. Leaving your crutches and being able to walk on your own. You don't think that doesn't...
Yeah, it just, I
resonate
completely
with me.
Forgot about that, yeah.
That was such a glorious moment, and I don't even know how wonderful it was for you, but even when my late daddy-o broke his hip, and after, you know, basically like 6 months in the hospital, because he had other problems too, and finally getting back home and being off the walker for the first time and being off the cane for the first time, it was such a proud moment when he was able to walk the few feet down the hall to the bathroom by himself. Like, it was a celebratory moment. We went out for a sushi dinner that night. No, I still made him take his walker and his cane when we went out to dinner, but It was just like we all cried. Even the kids were like, oh my God, this is amazing. But I mean, that's already a sign of growth in this character. Like, they're already aging her from the young, naive woman. You know, I don't even I don't even feel like at the beginning of the movie that she would she should have been considered a woman. She was a child.
Right.
But that right there is enough to already put her into the next category of, you have adulted your way through this thing, and that's
and
why
she has
we're
a lot
so
more to go. Trust me, there's a lot
oh,
more
I
to go.
I am sure of it. I am sure of it. I mean, let's just be honest. Any movie I've ever seen filmed in Iceland involves a lot of like really slow but really deep character growth.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not talk about Lars von Trier, okay?
Oh, von Trier. That's a solid 6-hour conversation right there.
Between the two of you, because I can't stand him.
No, I can't either, but what was it? Not Heaven's Gate. Maybe it was Heaven's Gate. I don't remember.
Breaking the Waves.
That one.
Breaking the Waves, maybe.
Breaking the Waves. Yeah.
Breaking the Waves. Yeah, you're right. Breaking the Waves.
That's
that
the
one
von Trier I did appreciate.
He did
here.
A handful. Yeah, true.
We're not here for von Trier, but yeah, like every movie I've ever seen filmed in Iceland does kind of follow that same arc. I mean, we can even talk about The Thing, where it starts out in Iceland.
Well, I'll tell you another one I want to do at one point that was filmed in Iceland and Greenland is Smell of Sense of Snow.
I don't know that one.
God, look at that.
The cinematography of this is pretty fascinating.
Oh, absolutely.
Weird how they go from, like, really clear, beautiful, bright colors to suddenly it's this, like, fiendish-looking, blurry landscape.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like that.
Well, again, he exaggerates, so he's setting the mood by color palettes. Very much so.
I'm very aware, and I'm loving it. Looks like the old lady did get a new drink.
I also love that they're using actual Icelandic language, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this cinematographer... Carl, earlier you were talking about the Henry Fool trilogy. He was the cinematographer for the first one, Henry Fool. Also for Drop Dead Gorgeous. And what was the one? All right, this is a really fun one for me. He was the cinematographer of 8 episodes and the director of several episodes of The Adventures of Pete and Pete.
Oh, cool.
I remember that show
right.
Where younger he had the tattoo of the Spanish lady on his arm and he'd flick his wrist and she looked like she was dancing.
Yeah. That was one of the weirdest shows ever created and I love it.
And we tried to warn them that they would listen. I was a child, yes, I remember. Hear the screams of bites. Smell that blood.
I am really familiar with that shit. They sound crazy, but half the time they're mostly true.
Take you just so far. She says that you should spend the night with us.
Wait a second. Were they literally drinking out of soup cans?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, if you saw that rock, would you want to go there? I would.
To the rock? Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Would I want to be on the island that I saw that rock from to get to that rock? No. No.
With these people? No fucking way.
Oh, no, those people, them's like my people. Yeah, they're definitely my people. I mean, he's pulling, like, the secret whiskey out of the back. Like, fuck yeah, I'll go anywhere with you. Give me that shit. I used to do that trick on the bar. You can take a salt shaker, and if you pour the salt out and distribute it evenly on the bar, you can hang a salt shaker on its side. On its, like, very, very corner edge on the bottom. But,
Okay, you know, I know what you're talking about. Right.
Yeah, yeah, as long as it's got the flat edge on it, like, you can put the salt on the bar and then put the salt shaker on top of it and tilt it up at an angle and hang it on its edge if you do it just right.
Right.
Still a really great bar trick to get you free drinks. Just saying. Anybody out there listening?
I'm sorry. I'm having too much fun watching Sarah Polley get fake drunk.
She's actually pretty good at it so far, though. Fake drunk is really hard to act.
Yes, very true.
But she's doing very well. I mean, she's holding her own against two of the greatest actresses in the fucking world.
Yeah, very, very true.
Apparently she was holding her own pretty well against two of the greatest drinkers in that county. Oh, wait, except for that.
Yeah.
That had just happened. Are they going to sacrifice her to the monster? And then
exactly.
They're going to fall in love.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
Oh, my God.
Well, I told you it was Beauty and the Beast versus the media.
Yep. Oh, wow. That is a poignant way of putting it. Really, it is.
I forgot that you said that. I remember that. You did say that to me a few days ago. Well, they at least look appropriately chagrined that they're doing that, but damn.
Look at that shot. Good God.
I know, right?
I'm sorry. I'm looking at all the fun hats and coats in this scene.
I had a hat
they do like
that. My
they do
dad
look like
had
one in Minnesota, eh?
Yeah. Or Bradford, Pennsylvania, where it got like 20 below.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, and he's going to be the guy that's going to feel really bad about it and go try and find her. And she's going to be like, no, I love him. He didn't mean
no
harm.
No, it's not that either. It's not that either. You see,
don't
you think
me,
you know what's going to happen.
Didn't mean no harm.
You don't.
He's asleep under the porch right now with his dog, Skinner. Oh, sorry, Bill Hicks reference there, guys.
Yeah,
Okay, so they're trying to make it look like she woke up there drunk?
No. Sacrifice. Even says it later.
Well, yeah, but they had the, you know, mostly empty beer bottles. If it was a sacrifice, they wouldn't have. Maybe they were trying to make it seem like an accident. Oh, my man is here. Shut up, guys. I got to listen now.
And he hasn't been in the movie for 20 minutes. And yet, he's been the focus of this film just from that first 5 minute monologue.
Raggedy ass bolo tie and pea coat. Like, I'm all about this shit right now. Broken horns. Yeah, buddy. You're damaged as fuck. I want to fix you so bad right now.
I kind of want to do this for Halloween now.
Yeah.
Fuck, I do.
Okay, look at that. That makeup is just wonderful. It's not overdone.
No.
But it's really, really good.
Is he warming me by the fire to turn me into bunny rabbit soup, or what's going on here?
I love it.
Obviously, you dumbass.
Where are my clothes? How did I get here?
And every once in a while,
those made Go buy yourself a new dress. This can't be fair in the bag.
My question is, where's all the dancing and singing candlesticks and teapots?
They didn't have the budget for that, honey.
And listen, there's too many fucks in the thing. This is not a Disney movie. Sorry.
What's wrong with you? I have a friend with a doctor.
I don't know, Michael. You gonna help me out here or what?
Help you? What can I do to help you? I don't even think I like you.
Yeah? Well, Tom, you're gonna help me out here. I'm gonna come down there, I'm gonna bite your head off, tear your heart out, and the whole ugly mess on fire.
Don't scare me.
What's your name?
Beatrice?
This is Beatrice. You'd like to see me dead, wouldn't you?
Not necessarily, no.
Of course you would. I killed your friend.
That's true, and I think you ought to be brought to justice and punished. You can learn to understand the wrong stuff.
What is what? Oh, God.
Jesus had it all figured out right now. One evil deed doesn't fix another. You've got to learn to love your enemies, too.
Okay. I'm going to close my eyes and you run away. If you're not off the island by the time I count 1,500, I'm going to choke off.
Do you really jump in for me?
Who the fuck is Jim?
My fiance. That's his video camera. This is his power book.
That's not awkward at all.
No. The silences, the structure of how this is put out, it keeps you off balance. And that's exactly what Hartley wants to do here. And they're now they're, this is really good. And yet he's in so much pain. At this point, if you're not feeling for him, something's wrong.
Yeah.
The silences are just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
sometimes I
think it's better. And you know, this could almost be a stage play. This could be a stage play. What do you think?
You know what, Rick, I totally agree with that. It is very much written in the style of a play as opposed to a film.
That's exactly how I felt with the opening monologue. This feels like a stage play.
It's true. They do. I've watched it happen. No. I'm changing the tone. It's true.
Did he kill them all?
You want me to find him, is that it?
Christ, Carl, is this why you're making me watch this movie? Because I swear to God, I wrote that fucking scene.
Yeah. So I guess we can all drink to that, huh? Oh, that's bad.
Cheers, buddy. Salute. Prost. Whatever.
Cilantro, or whatever the fuck the Irish say.
Sludge.
I know, but... Cilantro is funnier.
I think that's Beyonce's sister.
Actually, I would say Prosit. Amateur's nibble.
I love it.
Fuck you, dad jokes. This is some serious shit we're talking about right now.
I would say that when I was 15 years old.
Well, say what you want. Dad jokes are funny.
And she wouldn't help me either, because I can't go out every day and expect not to kill somebody, but okay. I don't even have horns and creepy face and rotting jacket syndrome, but cool. Does he give them some sort of signal that he, like, ate the dead bitch or ate the sacrifice bitch. Oh, no, she's come back to the island. Never mind. Should help them out.
So now the monster's going into civilization. Things change.
Well, of course they do. But do they change for the better? I think that's the question we have to ask ourselves right now. I'm sure we'll get some sort of answer, but...
Oh, you will definitely get an answer for that, yes.
Every day is exactly the same. Baby steps, Bob. Baby steps. Don't call me, you sacrificed me to the monster beast. I still love you guys because we got drunk
tonight. Yeah, right.
Totally
fine. No hard feelings. It's all good.
Where's my kiss? I'll help sacrifice you. Danny, come look. Danny, find my home.
Oh, God, like, seriously, his whole look is just brilliant.
Yeah.
Sorry, I did promise I wasn't going to bash anybody in the head with the butt of their own rifle. Fine. Fine.
Okay.
I honestly kind of got to wonder if they modeled the last Wolverine movie, Logan, off of this guy.
Oh my God, I totally see that.
Right? Yeah.
Why is she
tragic, self-loathing killer character, you know?
With a beautiful coat. And just
now,
like,
it's blue and
not
purple, but it's still
one.
Blue, which is a royal color.
Right.
No, that's still purple. She's wearing purple.
Definitely.
The other one was wearing blue.
Oh, yeah.
Listen, I want an excuse on this, but I can't let it, okay?
I just want to say from personal experience that those types of headsets are completely fucking ridiculous.
Oh, God. Did you ever have to use one of those, Rachel?
Yeah, I've worked in call centers before. They're the fucking worst.
Oh, God. They're just an absolute nightmare.
But now that she's tasted the local booze, she's addicted. She's going to live there for the rest of her life among the monsters and the riffraff. Oh, shit. We got the military involved. They got, the Range Rovers and shit. I mean, that's originally what those vehicles were for, was,
the military is involved. The military is involved.
Mm-hmm.
Robert John Burke should have done a duet with the guys from GWAR for this movie.
Actually, I would vote for The Residents, but yeah, you got the right idea, John.
Fair enough.
I'm pretty sure, wasn't it Otis Yongaris that died a few years back?
I think so. I think it is like 6 or 7 years at this point, yeah. What a loss.
Yeah. 6 or 7 is a few as far as I'm concerned. Last week could have been, 6 months ago.
Oh, yeah, I know. You heard about Cobain. He died, right? That happened pretty recently,
right,
too. Yeah.
What? Are you fucking kidding me?
No, I'm not. He died. Did you not hear about this? Yes, no, I totally understand. Eventually, it all just starts to blur together.
Yeah. What up, pretty lady? I'm sorry. This way the pets go.
Yep, nope, that goes too. You know, I get that. Like, I think we've all had one of those days where you just walk in and you see something in your house and you're like, you know what, that shit's going outside right now. Wait, oh my God. The guy who was just pouring the champagne, was that the guy who played Rex Manning in Empire Records?
I think so. Not sure about that, though. It's Carl.
Margaret, where is that makeup girl? Great. You know the girl, cute but sexy. Maybe some sunglasses. God, what are you doing all night? You must be well, the monster, I guess. You killed up the creature, don't you? Tore them to pieces and threw their limbs in the vault. I heard all about it.
Where's Dr. Arto?
We haven't found him yet.
Shit. See, this is an open bed to us already.
It's rumored he was abducted by the U.S. government for research on top secret weapons development.
Okay, now we have the other major character.
No.
Basically, I could play in this role. I could play this role.
Long wait for patience.
No, we have to stop them.
Those glasses, man. How thick are those glasses?
His character reminds me a lot of Jeffrey Combs' character in The Frighteners, but not quite as extreme. Yeah.
Get him out of here. Good, but nothing. Yeah, that asshole upstairs is a real monster. I want him kept alive for as long as it's possible.
Go away. Holy fuck, can you leave me alone?
I want to apologize.
Look at that dress. Good God.
Yes.
Okay, so she went from 12-year-old to dominatrix. I'm a little freaking out right now.
Right? No, yeah, there's this huge escalation with her character, especially in, like, the third act of the film. It just catapults. And it's the media attention destroying her.
Yeah. I mean, I see that, and I love it. I hate it so much.
And destroying him too.
Oh, jinx. You owe me a Dr. Pepper, bitch.
Actually, it's not destroying him. This is pure torture and hell for him constantly.
Well, and we'll get to a scene that absolutely destroys me here not too soon.
Because, like, it's the difference between her having, like, this common, you know, self-destruction phase, I guess, but with him, he is trying to fucking die, and they won't let him. They just keep dragging it on.
Straight up chugging a liter of Jaeger.
Reminds me of freshman year in college.
So, of course, the question is, who's the real monsters here?
I didn't think that was the question, but yeah.
When you were young.
The speeches are just amazing. It's a good question. What did make us damn adaptable?
Aliens.
Yeah, you and Vicky will go into that. Definitely.
It's all a ploy between the reptilians and the Pleiadians, man. I kid.
I'm indestructible. Sorry, it's not my fault. I know of no God.
And you wonder why I like connect to this film. Seriously.
Round and round, same old. Thank you.
That was just excellent. Thank you very much.
Just off, lady. Where's Dr. Arnold?
These gentlemen are waiting to take Dr. Arnold's training.
But where are they taking it? Oh, this will be Dr. Artel. Hey! What? Where's Dr. Artel? I want to see the doctor. Where's the girl?
What girl?
Beatrice. Oh, the girl.
There's a girl?
Yes, of course. There's the girl. I thank God I can't take away from me. Who are you going to sleep with around here anyway? You're going to fucking drink.
She realizes that all this sex and all this isn't worth it. I love that they show a little bit of music in there, too.
And then right beneath it, they had the Cube of Metatron.
Right. See, you know these things. I knew it was something like that, but I didn't know it was the Cube of Metatron.
Yeah.
It's out of my muscle. It's okay. I stand to need to march in. For what?
You're fine?
I'm on vacation. Almost, maybe. We have to wait and see.
Yeah.
It's called an equation of an architectural schematic. To know and to be. This is not even a question. There is no alternative. Seems clear in the between particles and waves, shunned even by the gregarious fog, unfurled by the various spans of time, so large it cannot be seen, yet small enough to be immovable, lies the fabric of infinite reality, written in only given consciousness of the all or nothing.
What do you call it?
Matter's eradicator. And invented to free a difficult friend from eternal damnation.
You must be Dr. Artel.
For what is worth, alas, my name is Mud. They keep me locked in a room on the top floor, but I said moving to the chambermaid, which is 7-3.
How are you examining the monster?
Not yet. I've been left alone with my thoughts.
Oh, no.
But it's not so bad for me.
What they've been lying to me this whole time? I'm still so naive. What?
So, Carl, all of the stuff that was on that table, I'm going to have to go back through this frame by frame because there was a whole lot of stuff going on there, man.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I caught the Pythagoras algorithm, golden spiral. I saw Cuba Metatron.
I think I saw
Sanskrit in there. There was a whole lot of stuff going on in there. I never noticed that before because I was never into this stuff until now, you know.
In the course of the paper, for hundreds of years, the sounds of Japanese intense scientific experimentation aimed at discovering this exact self-development. The government research in all the regions is as yet. Impervious even atomic radiation. The president claims the monster is an invaluable
Oh, Jesus. Now it gets rough, me.
Yeah.
It gets very rough here. And this isn't the worst of it for me. Not even close.
I'm not even comfortable with this at all.
He's an unknown substance. He's everything.
Why is the news lady involved in the scientific process is my only real question.
Suspension
here.
Of disbelief, Rachel.
Thank you. Fuck you and your logic or whatever. No such thing, if I'm allowed to say so.
Oh, nice. She said it, Carl. She said it. She said the thing. She said the no such
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, she
thing.
Did.
That was great.
I fucking went there. Fucking went there.
Great. Fuck.
We have to get him out in the field. Yes, of course. But you made a promise. Yes.
A promise to a young girl.
No, you have to be.
Exactly. In the car.
I hate how they keep calling her a young girl because obviously through everything that's happened in this woman or this movie, she's a woman.
Absolutely. And they of course, underestimate her too, trust me.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm sure. That's why they keep calling her a girl. And I'm really hoping for at least that one feminist moment where she's like, I am woman, hear me fucking roar. Because she's kind of
no,
a flat-out pushover.
Yeah, but there.
Oh my God, Carl! Do you know what this movie really is?
What?
It's Beauty and the Beast meets Valley of the Dolls.
Right.
No, beyond the Valley of the Dolls.
No, I'm serious. Think about it. Like, look at the destructive path that this has taken everybody on, right? This is
right.
Valley of the Dolls meets Beauty and the Beast.
Okay, this scene is just fucking rough. Because I've lived through shit like this.
You and me both.
And
right?
I'm not kidding.
It's a matter of time before Frankie will promise.
That is so fucking cold and calculated.
Uh-oh.
And like what in the... any sort of humanity that her
death.
Character
death.
Had.
Death.
God,
dead.
No, I
yeah.
Carl, you didn't tell me. Oh.
No, seriously, I'm not joking.
I know.
Yep.
I know, and that's why I'm like, oh.
I had a friend of mine watch this movie with me, and at the end of the movie, she just looked at me and she said, I'm so sorry.
The girl shut up and took it away. Over. I have been fired. The shit has hit the fan, lady, and it's all your fault.
Well, thank God he hung up on her and didn't listen to her bullshit explanation. Again, purple shirt, blue shirt on the left, purple shirt on the right. Then.
Okay, got to listen to this.
And purple again.
Best line in the whole movie coming up.
That's
quite a spicy part.
So salty.
Because he can drink a lot.
So does Arto.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, and I just want you to know that as far as, like, power colors and stuff are concerned, blue is a submissive but bold color. And I noticed that all of the submissive characters in the movie are wearing blue. Look at the background right now. Both of them.
Oh, my God, Rachel. I think... Wasn't Sarah... wasn't Beatrice's wardrobe completely blue until after the crash?
Yeah.
It was kind of gray blue, but yes.
Yeah,
yes,
and the earlier
was.
Stuff, like she had the skirt and the sweater. The schoolgirl, it was blue. But she, as it progresses, she is no longer wearing blue.
And look, she is no longer wearing purple. She is no longer wearing purple. She's wearing stark black and white, which is basically the I'm in trouble colors. It's very reminiscent of old school jail stripes.
Hey, Carl, I am going to go ahead and flat out tell you I want us to revisit this movie in 1 year.
Okay.
I need to do it, too. I need to watch it without everybody talking and me talking.
Yes. Yeah. And the more this progresses, the more stuff I didn't catch previous times before. Carl, we got to do this one again.
Oh, absolutely.
I think, like, there's so much shit going on here.
Okay, so I feel like the reason they started dressing her in black is because it was the beginning of her being in mourning for the loss of her innocence.
Right.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
And she still has the crazy hair and stuff, so that's, you know, indicative of her being the new person, but...
Cookie's trying to bother me.
About what?
There's also this thing going on with her hair as it progresses that you notice it's in the two little buns. It's almost like she's slowly
transforming.
It's actually
multiple little buns, like...
She's her, like, you know, the horns. She's growing her own horns. That's what that is.
Yeah, because it's falling apart just like his hair. It is because, you know, she had the hair twisted up like that when she went to the fancy show.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like it's still twisted up like that, but she's changed her clothes. She's got on the red boots, and it's still, like, falling out now. She never took it out because, I promise you, they probably
even more so than that.
So
check this out. When the movie started, when Beatrice was introduced as the younger, more naive and more innocent version of her that we see in this film, she starts off with
the very polished braided pigtails.
Yes, too.
Right.
But they're down. As the movie progresses, it gets higher and higher. It's wow.
But then it only progresses to the climax. And then it starts to fall down after that. Because, see, look here, it's down again. But you can still see part of the braiding still there, but it is almost like her horns. Like, that's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I didn't even see that. I just noticed the hair progressing in the movie. But even earlier when it was down, it was all straight and pretty, and... Even through the reflection right now, you can see that it's, like, frizzy and tangled and not quite.
And part of that is she's going through shit right now.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, she's starting to recognize what he's going through. But even see, like, the one on the top, her right, our left side, is further forward and higher than the one on the back side. And lower, like, it...
Now, the other thing, too, to bring up is the trust between the two of them and the relationship. The relationship is not Beauty and the Beast. It's not. It's not the romance.
They love each other, but they didn't fall in love.
Hold on.
All right,
it's recognizing the humanity in the monster and the monster in humanity. And she realizes.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a lot deeper and a lot more to this than than most people did. And this particular film was not successful at all.
No,
this movie
I can see that.
Dropped off
100%. but I love it so far.
It appeals to only a very specific audience, and unfortunately you don't have advertising for movies like this to really let that specific audience know. So it gets a little tricky. But no, I think in the course of this, I think we've tapped into and
yeah,
because
look at her right there specifically.
Right.
Look at her buns.
Yep.
Tall left, short right, or you know, vice versa, whatever. They look almost exactly alike. She's wearing the crazy tall boots and the ratty jacket, and her hair is all crazy.
She looks
and yeah,
more
he's
and more
got a
like
nice
him.
Suit on now.
Monster is ourselves.
This monster is ourselves.
He created this and he killed us in our sleep.
Which is, obviously 100% the overarching theme is that we are our own worst monsters. That's the
yes.
whole point of this. But it's Carl, I absolutely adore you for bringing this back into orbit with me because I am seeing it with much older and wiser eyes, and I am now seeing so many things. This is almost on level of trying to like dissect Twin Peaks.
And I've never seen this movie before, and even though I haven't been able to see all of it,
you didn't catch that there, but I want to repeat this line. To prove to a monster that he's part of our own imagination so we can kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Think of that for a moment.
But he's not a part of our own imagination. Like, he is us.
Yeah.
You'll never know what happened to him? Is that what she just said?
Yeah. And the relationship here with the touching, and you mentioned that before, the touching of the hair. I have to really look into that to see if that is Icelandic.
No. The touching of a woman's hair is very much a taking of their power.
But
I mean, if you
in,
really
a
want
different,
to...
in a different setting, it might mean something else. Because to me, it's more like trying to touch Jesus, trying to touch something that is better than us or different than us, trying to understand.
But was the man touching the woman's hair whom he thought was inferior to him? That was not him trying to touch Jesus. That was him trying to assert his power.
Huh.
But she's the one that pulls the power. It's interesting. I mean, I understand exactly where you're coming from.
Like, I really feel like with a lot of symbolism in this movie, like, she kept being denigrated.
So much going
okay,
on.
Okay, we're talking. I want you to be quiet during this and see what happens and see what you think. What happens here?
I'm being quiet.
What?
that is the end of the movie.
Okay, so
so the first question is, what do you two think of that last sequence, and what does it mean?
Rachel, you want to go first, or you want me to?
I can go first.
Go for it.
Don't really know.
Okay. John, you want to give it a shot?
Yes, I do. I think that whole last sequence was a representation of Beatrice's acknowledgement that she was becoming as toxic and as terrible as the very monster she brought into the forefront of the world around her, that it eventually ended up influencing her into a negative sense, right? And I think
Bear with me.
I'm not done yet. I think that last sequence was the moment that she was cutting that toxic part of herself off. And the last few frames that we get is that version of her staring back at who she is planning to become.
So basically that part of him that was dying died in her as well.
Yeah, and she was happy to let it go, and what that last moment was her looking directly into the most toxic parts of herself and saying goodbye, and not being cruel about it, but a heartfelt goodbye. I'm gonna miss you, but you have no place here. But I also have a couple of other things running around in my freaking noggin right now, because Carl, man, you pulled a wild card on us with this one. Rachel Lewis, I don't know how you feel, but I've seen this before, but now I'm seeing it with completely different eyes, and this is a whole different experience. I think I'm gonna have to Twin Peaks deep dive this stuff, like watch it 7-8 times in a row, eat a whole lot of pizza, that type of thing, you know.
Oh no!
I'm definitely gonna have to
watch it again. I did not get see every part of it because I am out of town and taking care of some kids and dogs right now. So I really need to be able to sit down and watch this movie by myself with not a 4-year-old and a 12-year-old and 2 hyperactive dogs in a room.
2 other people talking over it too, of course.
Exactly.
Let me give you my shot on it. Okay, that ending. So I had a wonderful conversation. I have a friend of mine who watched this with me, and she's like my adopted older sister. Her name is Barbara, and Barbara and I had a long conversation on this. To me, you have got part of it, because it's about forgiveness, and it's about, you know, letting that part of you go that's toxic. But also, it's with great sorrow, because in this relationship between her and him, and the monster, there was an acceptance of who they were at that point in time. And, yeah, you grow past people and that sort of thing. And, of course, there's sorrow because I do believe that he disappeared. He's no longer there. And that loss is something that she comes to terms with. And those final moments of that sequence where it's in smoke, it's like the smoke is clearing. And she can see a future from there.
Okay, but I have to say this. She was not involved in the monologue at the beginning of the movie.
No.
Before he goes out and, you know, buy a new couch, fucking wrecks the bar in the hometown, she wasn't there for that, where he was like, I've been good. I've been doing my damn thing. I hadn't been killing people, hadn't been eating people, hadn't been the thing you guys have all been accusing me of for hundreds of years, but now that you're finally fucking doing it, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, they're poking the bear. Right.
So my question is, was that at the beginning or the end of the movie?
That's actually
storytelling
not
is nonlinear. Huh.
No, it's not. At least
because
some storytelling
like,
is not linear.
Yeah, yeah.
No,
it's,
and
it's
some of the storytelling in that movie was nonlinear.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because we never get a time or a place or a date that any of these things happen. Like, we don't even know how long she was in the hospital for, okay?
No, it says 6 months.
I will say.
But yeah,
it does.
The one thing we confirm it was the 6 month lapse. That is true. Yeah, 100%.
They did confirm that there was a 6 month lapse, but they didn't confirm how long it was before they found her or anything like that.
Right.
And how long it was before she actually, you know, it was 6 months later when she was like walking on her crutches or whatever, but it didn't say 6 months later before she walks out to the news people.
Right.
So we have no idea what the timeline in this movie is. And I really feel like it's possible that his monologue in the beginning of the movie was actually the end of the movie because, yeah, he busts through the wall or whatever in the monologue, but when we see the very, like, next scene, he's walking out of a door. He didn't walk mm-hmm. through a busted wall, did he?
No.
Huh.
No, but you know, there is a linearity to it because if you look at the beginning, you've got the tape. He sends it. They get it. I mean, there is a sense of time, but you don't know how much time it is.
Exactly. And you don't know when this story happened because he sent a tape of the story saying, I'm going to be this monster.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like maybe he would have done that until after all of this happened. When, you know,
well, after
the,
he killed
the,
people. Okay, remember, he killed the three people that were sent. Okay, and he was already fucked up with everything. He was not happy. He was drinking, so on and so forth. So
he continued.
He went into that monologue with the tape and then sent it to him, and that's what started her going to him and so on and so forth. So, no, I do think that that was the beginning of the film.
No, I don't, because she went there because of the whole, you know, plane wreck weird shit.
Hmm.
Again, I have to
you
pause.
Know, you have a point. You have a point, but that's the one thing about this movie is there's no real complete answer. It's all how we look at it. And that's one of the beautiful things about this film, because you can get so much out of this film and so many different points of view from it. And that, to me,
I feel like he was the monster that he was in the beginning of the movie because of what happened to him, or not because of what happened to him specifically in the movie, but because of everything else. And then that happened. And I think that maybe he did survive. It sounded like he was narrating that tape to someone. And now that I've seen the movie,
right,
it seems like he was maybe narrating the tape to her.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
well, that,
she's
that
the one
be
that sent it to him.
So whenever Beatrice first shows up at his lair, she points out the video camera that her fiancé had. I think what happened is he had a moment of weakness or confession, and he fired up that camera, figured out how to work it, and he recorded that on his own. I know it wasn't necessarily presented as found footage, but I think that's what they were trying to convey.
I feel like that too. I really do. I feel like he had a connection before the monologue. And it might not be the connection that I was thinking. It might be, you know, the fiancé connection, even though the fiancé, yeah, well, the fiancé did. He went there and died. I feel like there was a connection to Beatrice before the monologue ever happened. And I believe that that monologue happened after the beginning of the story. And I guess, to me, the beginning of the story could include before the fiancé died.
I could see that 100%.
Because he always said that they sent him a beautiful, you know, sacrifice, but he never said that it was a beautiful lady. Not that I remember. It was a little low, so
that,
I couldn't hear
anything. That is very true. They did not gender specify it. And you already heard, like, from the monster's mouth itself when it stated that you're either going to figure out a way to kill me or I'm going to kill you, basically. Like, that was the long and short of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's quite possible that Beatrice's fiancé, her missing fiancé, went there before and was the sacrifice for the monster, because I feel like not a whole lot of people go to that super small village in that super small island to go to that super small rock where the monster lives. So it's very possible that her fiance might have been the sacrifice before her.
Absolutely.
Oh, I don't think there's any question of that.
Yeah, no, absolutely, 100%. But for me the question is, like, the whole monologue that he did being recorded, did he ask the fiance to do that before he lost and killed him, or did he just use his camera? I don't know. There's a whole lot of stuff to think about. This, I love you, Carl, but also damn you for bringing this one back into my radar, because I'm going to be stewing over this, like, more than I did for Mulholland Drive.
Well, let me tell you something. That's what I do. I mean, seriously. I mean, the films that I truly love are the ones that make you think. You know, and I mean, we did the commentary on Dark Song, and I would recommend anyone to listen to that, by the way. It's those type of films that I think are really interesting and should find a bigger audience. And with incredibly strange films, there's enough weird people out there that are going to dig this. And I got to tell you something before we end up here. So I posted this on a number of sites. And the feedback for this particular film, Hartley, which was not well considered when it first came out, it's just like people love this film. And I also have to dedicate this particular commentary watch to Bill Reynolds. Bill was going to join us tonight, but was unable to. So, Bill, this one's for you. So I hope you enjoy it. So any last thoughts before we get into housekeeping?
I have so many thoughts that would keep us here for the next 3 hours. So I'm going to say, let's do a deeper dive into this, the three of us, off broadcast, of course. And pick this. Yeah, are you down for that, Rachel? Yeah.
Oh, 100%. But I also am 100% down for housekeeping.
For what now?
Okay.
Housekeeping, you know, knock on the door.
Oh.
Knock, knock, knock. Housekeeping.
Housekeeping. So let's do housekeeping.
Hotel,
we got to clean up some podcast issues before we get off the air for the night. So
okay, so we only have 60 seconds, so let me go very quickly here. Tomorrow we have a Filmmaker's Journal Part 2 with Vicki Love. Vicki is directing a film called Lake that she's shooting in Fresno. Then on Monday, we have Greg Sestero. And John, if you want to call into this, you're more than welcome. Greg Sestero is the co-star of The Room with Tommy Wiseau. He also wrote The Disaster Artist, which was about the making of The Room and was made into a major film with James Franco. And then on Tuesday, we have...
I'm more than happy to be a part of that. Yeah.
And we have Paul Johnson. Paul Johnson is a golden age of photographer and a golden age of porn. So we're going to be talking about porn and photographer and layouts and all sorts of things with Paul Johnson. So that's what we're doing. Again, Rachel and John, it's just wonderful to have you on for this commentary. Sorry if I fucked up your brain too much, people, but it's a great film. And just real quickly, what did you guys think of the acting, just everything about it? Just real quick.
Loved it. And I also have to mention a show that is coming up on the 30th. It's called A Woman's Perspective. Mika Davis, myself, and one of their friends whose last name I don't know, and I am so sorry, but Amanda, just met her today. Sorry, guys. We are going to be doing an introspective, non-political view on some current female regulations, some of which involve Texas. And just some history and some facts and some relative viewpoints. That's going to be on the 30th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, so 7 Central.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, I'm
not. Well, actually, a week from today, we're going to be doing a show with TC, one of our music shows. And we're going to be focusing on Halloween music. And then on the 5th, or is it the 6th? It's the Tuesday. The Tuesday of that next week, we're going to have Sam Ervin on, and we'll be knee-deep into our spooky October season. So it's going to be really good.
It is definitely absolutely time for spooky season. Rachel, really quick, where all can we find that, what do you have coming up in the next couple of weeks? You mentioned it, but where do we follow you on that?
It's still going to be on Blog Talk Radio, and we're going
to
post it on ISF
because
I am still a part of ISF, which is the Incredibly Strange Films Facebook group. So,
and also on the Deviant Legion Facebook page, too.
Yes.
Yeah,
and on the Deviant Legion Facebook
page,
since you know me personally, John, and you, Carl, obviously, when you get the bump up for me, I will be posting that on my page, and I will make it free and publicly accessible for everybody to share. And please do, because I think it's going to be a really interesting conversation. Like I said, we are going to keep it apolitical. So there's not going to be calling out any of the left or the right or the Democrats or anything like that. We're just going to be talking, you know, woman to woman about what's going on with the state of our health affairs right now.
It'd be interesting to hear, and I think we all need to be educated more on it, so definitely interested.
Well, we have a lot of facts, there's going to be an opinion section, but we do have a nurse coming on to talk about medical facts. We have a historian like me coming on to talk about historical facts about things. Mika is going to be talking about, well, really just everything in general, history, medically, opinionated, all of it. So it's going to be a really interesting perspective. And I don't want to say it like this, but I have a lot of male friends in my life who have never heard about this issue from a woman's perspective, and I think it might be interesting for you guys and very informative if you'd give us a little listen for a little bit.
Absolutely. I'm 100%. Yeah, absolutely. So you just let us know.
Agree.
I will definitely spread the word 100%.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, so we're in overtime right now. We have a little bit of time. Any last thoughts on the film, particularly like the acting, directing, anything you want to say?
Fucking fantastic.
I want to do a deep dive into the cinematography, and I'm definitely going to do a way deeper dive into Hal's work. I feel almost ashamed that this is the one and only one of his films that I know of. So I'm gonna do a deep dive into his work. Thank you for doing this, Carl. This is an excellent choice, and it's actually, you know what, it is definitely one that requires more than one viewing. And I think I'm actually at an age and experience level in my life that this is worth way more than one viewing.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely one of my favorite points done so far.
And for me, I've always appreciated films where the monsters, you know, whatever monster you run into, you can feel for them. You have this emotional attachment to, and you understand their pain. And of course, you know, this movie and a movie like I can't think of it. Never mind. I can't think. But there are certain movies where the monsters, the monsters from Midian. What's the name of that one?
Nightbreed.
Nightbreed. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Nightbreed. This is another one, which I love, and Hal Hartley. Definitely. If you don't know Hartley's films, definitely check into them. Very interesting. And that he has another film, which I'm going to get you into. He has a film that was set at the millennium. And everyone thinks the world's going to end. So it's basically Jesus and Satan and that having an argument. And what is the name of that? Hold on, I have it right here. But that's another one you want to check into. And that is called Nothing Grim. Not Meanwhile. Damn it. That's not the
Girl
from Monday.
The Book of Life.
The Book of Life. That's it. The Book of Life.
Yep. Yeah. I have not seen that. Oh, my God. PJ Harvey played Mary Magdalene. I am finding this tonight. I am doing a deep dive. I am finding this shit tonight, man. I love PJ Harvey. That is amazing. Great. I'm in it.
And his latest film, Rachel, has Aubrey Plaza.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to look in that tonight, too, because I have left my kids. There is an adult in the other room, but I left my kids watching Spengooly for the night.
Yeah, you should go tame that. Go do what you got to do. Rachel, Carl, yes. Thank you both so much for having me on. Thank you for joining me on this. And what a great trip. Like, I haven't seen this in over a decade, hands down. But to go back and revisit this and see so much more symbolism than I ever saw the first time that I ever watched it. And, you know, the last 20, 30 minutes, we started picking up on a whole lot of stuff that I never picked up on before. So I would really love to revisit this one with you guys sometime in the, you know.
I'm great being the virgin of the movie, but once I've seen it once, like, I will pick up on so much more the next time. So, John, you and I have so many conversations in the future, and Carl, if you're not, you know, directly involved in those conversations, you know, I'm going to call you like 2 seconds later and be like, oh, my God, let me tell you what just happened. because seriously, Carl is like my BFF. So,
Carl, you seriously brought a brilliant can of worms to this conversation. Like, I loved the film when I first saw it. I had no idea how much was actually going on underneath the surface of it. And now that, you know, older, wiser, we all get that. And Rachel, you're 100% right. Yeah, we're going to tear this thing apart. And I think we can all make time for that one. But thank you again so much for having me.
Okay, so I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight and for listening. And guys, I'm going to leave you go. And I think it's time for us to say good night.
Good night. Good night. Love you all. Thank you. And good night, Carl. Good night, John. Good night, John Boy. Good night, Mom. Good night, Dad. Good night, Moon. Love you all.
Good night.
Good night, bye.
Bye.